Nick, thank you very much for taking this time for hanging out
with us.
We've got our next speaker. It's going to be coming up in just a moment. This one here is doing, what's the word you always say all the time?
Hadoop.
So some Hadoop stuff, some goodness for data is going to be coming up. We've got Lara that's actually doing an interview with a couple of CVPs that are coming up here, specifically talking about data. Right. Now, what's the question we're going to ask for the contest for drones and phones this time around?
Right. So in this content, you should listen for Joseph Sirach, who is the corporate VP at Microsoft for Data Group. And he's got an idea of the two things that will rule the world. So you have to name the two things.
Okay, two things that rule the world. So Naz, go ahead and roll that clip.
Hey, today we're going to talk about the evolution of data, and I've got two...
Intelligence from data,
of course.
Yeah, right.
And I've got two great minds from Microsoft to help have this conversation. We're going to start with James.
So I have the greatest job in the world. I work at Microsoft, spend a lot of time with customers who are struggling with data, and look forward to talking about it today.
Great.
Yeah, and I'm a machine learning geek. I mean, I talk about turning data into intelligent action.
Yes, all data.
All data.
Intelligent data. Thank you. Right. And my name is Lara, and today we're going to talk about where we've been with data, where we are today with data, and I'm going to dive into some of the predictions on where we think we're going to go with data. So let's get started. So just recently, we've interviewed Graham from the Williams Formula One, and Graham was talking about some of the evolutions that he experienced in the world of data just within the Formula One world in that sphere. He talked about back in the 70s and how they, you know, used to capture data and how data even was like a stopwatch and it would just fit on a floppy and, you know, just that kind of data, shipping data around. And where they are today with, you know, multi-gig per race and gathering, you know, sensor data, hundreds of sensors per car, and how it's changing the way that industry has started to evolve. And he referenced, you know, things like, you know, how data is the new oil. You know, it's kind of become that meme that we've heard over the many years since big data hit the platform a couple of years ago. And what I wanted to do is hear from you, you know, where you've seen things evolve, you know, as Graham saw and shared his story of the evolution of data. I'd like to understand maybe what was some inspiring moment in data in the history where you kind of looked at it and said, wow, that really changed something. And it could be small, it could be big, but I'd love to hear what you've experienced. James.
So I think that, you know, if you look at data and the evolution that we've seen over the last couple of decades, I would argue that the nature of software systems and of applications has really driven a lot of what we've seen in data.
Right.
If you think about data as it existed, you know, 30 years ago, it largely in the enterprise setting existed to hold the transactional records of a business.
Right.
You had a line of business applications that helped you run factories more efficiently, that allowed you to keep track of your financials, and the data that was collected in those sorts of systems was transactional in nature. The software systems that interacted with that data were fairly low volume. Mm-hmm. You may have 100, 200,000 employees at most using software systems going against this data. And the kind of database technology that we used at that point in time was really optimized for that class of software.
Absolutely.
And you fast forward over the last 20 years with the emergence of the internet, with the explosion of sensors, with the ability to collect data from just about everything, it is the new oil. The pressures that have been placed on back-end database systems have changed dramatically. And now you don't just have 100,000 people. You've got millions of sensors with millions of people using software systems on across the internet. And it really has changed the nature of what data is all about. So I wouldn't point to any one particular sort of groundbreaking moment. For me, it's sort of putting the frog in the pot. You know, over time, things have emerged to the point where I think we've reached a tipping point, but it hasn't happened abruptly. It's happened gradually, and it's reached a peak, I think, at this point.
Right. And the interesting thing that, from your perspective, I mean, if we look at your history, you've worked with some of the alternative platforms than, you know, your traditional just everything within a relational system.
That's right.
Things that can capture data in multi-schematic format and store it, you know, in different ways so that you can bring that data forward, you know, without having to make sacrifices of, you know, well, I only want to capture these types of information because that's all that fits within my system.
That's right.
You know, so you've had some interesting history around that.
Yeah. So the you're right. I think part of what's happening with data, in addition to the volume increasing, as you allude to, is that we're getting a lot of variety. You know, they talk about the three V's: volume, velocity, variety. And I had founded a company called Couchbase prior to coming to Microsoft, and Couchbase was a and is a NoSQL database company. And a big part of the Couchbase story and the technology was the ability to address both the volume in some ways, but primarily the variety. You know, as a JSON-oriented database, you've got the ability to very, very quickly and easily store data without worrying about conforming to a rigid schema that you would have to conform to in a relational
database. And 10 years ago, that was unheard of. You had to conform to a schema. You had to think about how do we want to store the data, which meant you had to understand how you needed to report on it later and make decisions at the very beginning. And today, I mean, even in our relational systems, we don't have to make a lot of those really hard decisions. We've got a lot more agility to work with data as it evolves over time and store that data into these central systems.
And I think it's been pretty transformatory. So James talked about the ability to collect data from almost anything.
Right.
I wanted to actually tell a story about how that is revolutionizing some of even the world's oldest industries. So actually, let me show you something. So what I have.
You brought something along.
Yeah.
I'm scared now.
What I have here, this is a cow pedometer. Manufactured by Fujitsu.
Yeah.
Fujitsu actually puts these pedometers on the legs of cows in farms all over Japan. So you might ask, why a pedometer? You know, do cows need to take 10,000 steps a day?
Right.
What do you think? So before I tell you the answer, you know, these days every company is a data company, even dairy farms. Dairy farms have all the constraints of a business. They have an output, which is milk and meat. And they are constrained by the pasture, the labor they have, and feed. And they have to optimize their output based on all of these constraints. Mm-hmm. So what could a farmer do? So it turns out the farmer has two really big controls at his disposal. One of them is to ensure that the cows are healthy. And the second one is to ensure cows are productive all the time.
Right.
Okay. So now to that second problem is what this goes to. It turns out one of the most important things in the farm is to ensure that the cows, when they go into heat, and they go into heat only for a very short time period during a 21-day cycle, it's about in a window of 16 hours in a 21 days, and it's of course like most natural processes are kind of variable. So it's literally a needle in a haystack problem.
Right.
And so we've got to figure out when the animal goes into heat, and farmers have had to do this for thousands of years.
Right.
And the way they do that traditionally is experienced farmhands who know how to detect the signs of an animal going into heat so that they can schedule artificial insemination right. But what would you do if you have a dairy farm with hundreds of cows? How do you know when the time is right for hundreds of cows?
Right.
I mean, could you use technology to help? Could you build sort of a heat map of the dairy farm, so to speak?
Right.
That's the question.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. I know,
but that's a question. I mean, it's a real question for farmers. For all of us, it's pretty funny. But that's a question a farmer in Japan asked Fujitsu. And Fujitsu built a system using pedometers to collect the step count data from cows, okay, and send it to a service in Azure in the cloud. Yeah. The service in Azure analyzes the number of steps a cow is taking every hour. And from that, it can detect very precisely when the animal is going into heat.
So how did they know to deal with steps? I mean, is this something that they just had a hypothesis and thought, well, you know, let's gather some information about this and see if it helps inform something about the health of the cow?
Right.
Was it
and
a
it's
hypothesis
very interesting.
They tested?
Yeah, in 2005, some dairy researchers in the U.S. had a great idea. Now, you remember at that time, pedometers had just come in.
Right.
They actually put it on cows because they knew the one sign, by the way, of cows going to heat is they get restless and start walking around furiously.
Yes.
And so they had this idea that, hey, if you count the number of steps, could I detect that when the animal goes into heat? And that's exactly what they did. And so the principle is actually very simple. So you measure the number of steps a cow is taking every hour, and you count the, take the ratio of the number of steps a cow is taking at this hour versus the number of steps a cow took at the same hour the previous day. Mm-hmm. And if you take that ratio, and you look at it, when an animal goes to heat, it just spikes up big time. And you can detect that very precisely. It's a 95% accurate signal for onset of estrus. Mm-hmm. And the optimum time for artificial insemination is 16 hours from that time.
Right.
And that's when you get a maximum consumption rate. That's when AI meets AI, artificial insemination. <that is. laughs> But and
Fujitsu, another button pump.
Hey, Fujitsu researchers found other fascinating things. Look, around that optimum, they found that if you perform artificial insemination the first 4 hours, you get a female calf.
Right.
With 70% mm-hmm. probability.
Yep.
And if it's in the second 4 hours, you are likely to get a male calf. Okay. So now the farmer has an amazing control at his disposal.
Right.
Using data and collecting data from all sorts of things, like, you know, animal step counts. Now, he's got a control to not only optimally fertilize the animal, but also choose the sex of the animal so that he has the right mix of bulls and female cows in the farm. And that's an amazing control. Yeah. And then Fujitsu kept on looking at it. They found they could detect when the animals are sick. Silent animals, when they go, you know, they can't tell you they're sick, mm-hmm. but using step count data, they can say the cows are sick or not.
Right.
And remember I said this is 95% accurate, the remaining 5%, some of that turns out to be useful as well, because some of that is when the cow jumps over the fence and skips the farm. So it's kind of important to detect
right.
as well.
Right.
So let's take a step back. So here's what happened. Our ability to instrument data collection with sensors, like you said, in all sorts of environments, such as dairy farms,
right.
and then use the cloud. Now, the farmer doesn't have to worry about setting up servers, analytic mechanisms, yeah. and all of that. They're just sending the data to a service in the cloud. Mm-hmm. And the service in the cloud detects the onset of estrus, alerts the farmer on a mobile mm-hmm. phone. And the farmer can now act, and it dramatically increases the efficiency of mm-hmm. his farm. And the cows are productive, there's more milk, and mm-hmm. there's, you know, the right mix. That's the kind of transformation that's happening in every industry. The collection of data, mm-hmm. the collection of data, not just to store it, but to analyze it
yes.
and drive a specific action
yep.
that optimizes a business. That's changing every aspect.
And even in agriculture, another story that I've worked with customers in the recent past, as much as 4 years ago, and then even recently last night, we were discussing this, optimizing how you plant. And this is
exactly.
for not just to, yeah. you know, increase your business for the large businesses, but yeah. Also to improve things in third world countries,
yeah.
to optimize when and how they plant so that they can right. feed
and
people better.
In fact, there is a startup in Australia called mm-hmm. Grape Brain.
Yes.
And what they do is collect data from vineyards mm-hmm. to optimally forecast the amount of grapes that's produced in a vineyard.
Yeah.
And you know, why is that important? Because it turns out forecasts today that farmers make are off by 30%, 50%. Mm-hmm. And they have to line up trucks to move the grapes, the winemaking equipment, the bottler, all of those things. And if they over forecast, they have excess capacity they are paid for.
Right.
It's very costly.
Yep.
If they under forecast, they're wasting grapes. Mm-hmm. They have to be optimally balanced. And so this company called Grape Brain used Azure machine learning to optimally predict the yield of a
yeah.
vineyard using soil conditions, climate data, and repeated collections mm-hmm. they have done. So they're within 10% of the actual. So there is an optimal matching of mm-hmm. the equipment for winemaking to the yield.
Right.
And that's
Grape brain. Nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yes.
Doesn't beat the cow story, though. That's right. That is the best story ever.
Right? Yeah. Right. I agree. Another interesting thing that I've seen through this evolution about where we are today. Okay, we talked about where we've been and, you know, some of those things that have kind of been interesting to you about this history and kind of getting to this place today. I share a story just for me. I mean, I've worked in this industry for a long time. And even just as much as a few years ago, I call it the olden days of 3 years ago, the ability to be able to process data on a stream or process a stream of data, to do analytics on a stream of data and analyze that data before it's even persisted
yep.
someplace mm-hmm. and really get as close to the time that data has been generated and do some analysis on it. That wasn't accessible 3 years ago. It was, you had specialized hardware skills. You know, you needed to, you know, really understand how to build those systems and specialized software. And you didn't see a lot of those out in the industry. And today, I do keynote demos in 3 to 5 minutes and set this up end to end.
Yeah.
End to end. I mean, the accessibility of these systems today to be able to build new kinds of applications. It's amazing how you can do this now, and just even a few years ago, you didn't have that accessibility. Have you seen some of that as well? I mean, is this something that resonates with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the, you know, it sort of goes back to, there's a supply side and a demand side mm-hmm. part of this equation.
Yep.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago, there wasn't a ton of streaming data coming off of everything.
Right.
And if you think about stream processing, where you did see that, typically in the financial services industry, where you've got trades happening, you've got trades happening constantly, and there were specialized systems that allowed you to take that time series data, ingest it in large volume, and process it in flight. Hopefully,
but you still
to
had
allow
to persist it.
That's right.
Yep.
Hopefully, to make better trades, to make better decisions. And today, you got cows sending data.
Right.
And so, because you've got all of this information coming at you on the demand side, there is a need for a solution to the problem. And as Joseph said, if you're running a dairy farm, setting up systems and servers and software and figuring out how to stitch all this together is an intractable problem. And so,
why keep redoing the same thing, you know, and everybody has to push the same four buttons?
That's right.
Right.
That's the thing about the fully managed services in the cloud.
Yeah.
So when these are services running in the cloud, you don't have to worry about hardware, software, anything. You can just send data to those services, and then there you can just configure some streaming computations.
Right.
That's an amazing thing. Like,
that's
so the connected cow demo, for example, it takes 3 days for one of our developers to set it up end to end. And if you have this pedometer connecting, and you know, maybe even you could learn a lot more from your Fitbit than you thought you could.
Right.
But you know, connecting one of these things up to the cloud, analyzing it real time, and setting up dashboards with Power BI. And those things take days as opposed to months and year of development.
Yep.
And then, because these services live in the cloud, it's accessible globally.
Yeah.
And you roll it out globally in a day, as opposed to shipping it on CDs or downloading it on a web, you know, web page, installing it. The distribution of these services have changed as well. And that's why software and data will rule the world.
Right. So, I'm going to key off of something you just mentioned, because you talked about the supply and demand and how, now we've got all of a sudden this big demand, big push to be able to do very near real time or close to the time that data has been generated and do analytics on the data. What's the new demand? What are you seeing as the new demand, and what's going to be the next thing that we have to make sure that we just, it commoditizes and it's just a click button away to make that easy?
Well, I think, you know, one of the realities that we must grapple with as an industry, as a world, actually, I believe, is security.
If you
think about the data that's coming off of everything, the ability to ensure that you can maintain the privacy of that data, that you can maintain the security of that data, that you can ensure that the data is used in appropriate manner. Is an important part of what we all have to grapple with.
Yes.
We've all seen the movies, and as we start to collect vast amounts of information about every living thing, about every inanimate object, we enter an environment where privacy and security have always been important, but I think in as we go forward, they're paramount.
Right.
And I think that, to me, is one of the bigger industry questions that we have to continue to grapple with, and one that we spend an awful lot of time with here at Microsoft. If you look at the investments that we're making in the Azure cloud, our investments in Go Local Computing, where we have national clouds we're rolling out, we're making huge investments as a company.
And that's important for a lot of those communities, that if they don't want to ship their data outside of their community, they've got that local. And you're right, I mean, those are really important investments.
Yeah.
What other things with regard to security? I mean, this data sometimes is very personal, and how do you think about, you know, the way that we might be able to process and use and share this information, and our customers, our partners, and the applications that will be built in the next couple of years? Are you seeing a certain demand for a certain kind of application that does bring in that security element?
I think that, you know, one of the things that we're doing is very practical. We're allowing organizations to encrypt their data and to encrypt their data in a way that they control, where they have the key, where they're able to maintain control over access to that data in readable form. And we're doing it at rest. We're doing it in flight. And there's some really, really interesting and groundbreaking technologies in Joseph's world where we are able to allow you to maintain data in an encrypted state in the cloud while still querying against it, even in encrypted form,
and
which is mind-blowing.
As people are querying it. That was something one of our customers a few years ago was talking about. How do I get this full audit trail about who has access to it, who did access it, where it was shared? You know, and they were thinking even as data was just a piece, one little piece, and how they can take that data and share it out with multiple different people. But they wanted to make sure that if that person shared it with other people, how that data moved from person
Absolutely.
To person.
Yeah, maintaining that audit trail is really, really important.
Yep.
And by the way, one more thing I wanted to add. We have had a lot of conversations about data, but I think the keyword that's entering into all conversations is intelligence.
Yes.
Now, data is there for a purpose, for action, for intelligence. And the ability to extract intelligence, deep intelligence from data, has advanced at a dramatic pace. Now, all of you have heard about techniques like deep learning.
Yes.
Those things can now be brought to bear on a large amount of data to gather insights that we could never before. And so every sensor in the world, every effector in the world that can actually take action, now can leverage intelligence that resides in the cloud and the data that resides in the cloud and securely. And the planet as a whole gets a brain that lives in the cloud. I think that's the trend we are going towards.
Great.
The planet has a brain. I'm going to use that one.
Planet brain, not
planet
a
brain. I like it. I like it.
All right. Well, thank you very much, James and Joseph. It was really great talking with you today, and I appreciate you sharing some of the insights you've had around what you've seen evolve and where we're going, and really excited to see where we're heading as well with data and all the intelligence that we're going to get out of that data and be able to do this in a secure way, because honestly, it is a very personal thing. A lot of the times, this is our own information. We want to make sure that we understand what's happening with it. So it's great insight. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. And we're back once again from the live stream. Thank you very much if you're joining us live from one of our partner sites at IT Dev Connections, Petri, and also throughout.com, or even, apparently, a bunch of sites in German. I don't know what we sound like in German, but nice to see you. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm joined by guest host, Mary Jo Foley. Thank you very much for, again, deciding to help us out with this. It's been a lot of fun.
No, it's been great.
Now, I do have to ask, because on Windows Weekly, the show that you normally host with Paul Thurrott and also with Leo, you are known as the Hadoop.
I
love saying the word.
It's almost become my middle name now.
I think it is.
I know.
They're waiting for you to say the word, basically.
I know. Every time I say Hadoop on Windows Weekly, it's always everybody drink.
Okay.
And it's become a tradition now.
Nice. Well, we might have to start to reinstitute that
we
as well.
We may have to.
You never know. So
great.
The question that we had for this one was specifically with Joseph Sirosh talking about the CVP for the data group. According to Joseph, what two things will rule the world? And we don't have the CVPs to be able to answer this question, unfortunately, because, you know, they're corporate vice presidents. Apparently, it's easier to get some technical fellows and distinguished engineers than it is for the CDPs. Mm-hmm. What was the answer correctly?
The answer is software and data.
Software and data. And so if you manage to happen to tweet that out with the proper hashtags and all sort of stuff, it's for tech reward points. Mm-hmm. I was corrected over one of the breaks. In order for you to actually qualify for the drones and also for the phones, it's actually going to TechNet VC and registering on that site for updates about what's going on. The hashtags that we go through on a regular basis during the individual sessions is actually for tech reward points. And that's an international audience that works for that one there. That's good. So don't forget, all the sessions will be available on demand 24 hours after the sessions actually take place. I can absolutely tell you, I can kind of fake it when it comes to security because that used to be part of my job.
Uh-huh.
When it comes to data, I cannot fake it.
Right.
So I'm just going to kind of look to you for maybe sharing some insights you got out of that one.
So this video to me is very interesting because I write about a lot of these technologies because it's kind of the up and coming part of Microsoft where there's a lot of emphasis, a lot of new products. And I always get IT people saying, yeah, I don't really, you know, Power BI, why should I care? Data Lake, why should I care? But if you watch that video, the thing that that resonates to me is this, as we've been talking about in some of the other segments, is a way to differentiate yourself.
Yeah.
Right? This, if you know about machine learning, if you know about HD Insight and data lakes and data catalog, all these things that are now services available on Azure, you are so marketable right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy.
Now, one thing that's kind of interesting to kind of lower the bar for entry into the whole data lake and big data type stuff, again, not to plug my own service I work for right now, but on the Azure.com site, when you sign up for one of the trials, you are actually able to sign up for the preview of Data Lake, and we can even pre-populate your environment with sample data to be able to go off and do stuff. And so if you're an IT pro and if you're a dev that's looking to try to get into playing around with some more data type stuff, we at least don't leave you hanging and having to come up with your big massive scale sets of data.
Right.
Caveat to that, though, is that obviously that will be churning and causing money to be consumed, because it is a lot of data. And so just be cautious with that if you're doing it on a paid for subscription or if you're going to be doing it with one of the free trials, that you just make sure that you go off and spin things down, because it will churn through it pretty quickly. We had an interesting quote here from, I was going to say, if I look at my phone here, because I have to look underneath here, Peter Deschal, Peter Sesh-Dal. I think that's how you say his name. Was coming up. He loves the new term of connected cow during the TechNet VC hashtag. It's always going on there for different things.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if people on TechNet VC have seen this presentation, but Joseph Sirach does a really great explanation of the connected cow.
Oh, yeah?
And his joke is, it's all about AI. But if you know what the connected cow thing is about, it's two kinds of AI. There's artificial intelligence and artificial insemination.
Oh, okay.
Hey, who knew I'd get to say insemination on TechNet VC?
It's fantastic. who do you have coming up next? Our next session, you know what? We're going to jump right into the next one, because we've actually decided to let this next video run a bit longer.
Right.